very strong movement of self-organization, and at the same time the only response that the Spanish government offered were the images that we thought this could happen, but really the images that we saw yesterday are far beyond from what we expected. And I was before listening to the mayor of San Juan, and it reminded me a little bit, you know, the way the Spanish government and the Spanish president is talking about what happened yesterday in Barcelona is so different from the perception from what is happening in there. So the Spanish government is talking about the use of violence is something that like what the situation deserved, while people in Barcelona are telling that the violence use was totally out of measure. I mean, the government of Barcelona offered a medical help to the people, also legal, help to respond to this, because the situation has been very, very far away from what everybody thought it could happen.
Mm. Well, we're going to continue this discussion, part two. I want to thank our guests. Pau Fals, filmmaker, Ada for Mayor was his film. I also want to thank Sebastian Faber, professor of Hispanic Studies at Oberlin College. With my colleague Juan Gonzalez at Rutgers University, I'm Amy Goodman. Our website is democracynow.org. Special thanks to Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gattas, Diener, Juan Carlos Davila, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Caron. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Dead Moon Night, Thursday, October 5th at 6 p.m. at the outdoor portico of Portland City Hall. Dead Moon Night is a celebration of the Portland band Dead Moon. An official proclamation declaring that day as Dead Moon Night will be read along with surprise musical guests, refreshments, and an exhibit about Dead Moon. Again, that's Dead Moon Night, Thursday, October 5th at 6 p.m. at the outdoor portico of Portland City Hall, 1221 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Portland.
Radio 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany area, and via the World Wide Web is kboo.fm. This is More Talk Radio, and I'm Cecil Prescott. And if you're listening to us live, it is October 2nd. And if you listen to us later on a podcast, it was recorded on October 2nd. How are you with money? Do you find yourself in a crisis over how to live and doing what you need to do? We're going to talk with a old friend, old meaning, you know, long time, not, well, age-wise, but that's okay too.
I'm getting older.
Older, yeah. Each day that happens.
Better than the alternative, Cecil.
That's what they say, but maybe, well, we'll have that philosophical discussion later. But Douglas is active with PUGS. I just love that name. It's like, how did you come up with that? Was it with the acronym first and then the Portland Underground Graduate School? So you just Portland Underground Graduate School and say, an acronym.
Well, I'm a big fan of acronyms. So when I was looking for a name for Portland Underground Grad School, I was looking for an acronym. Uh-huh. I started a pickup soccer club called Portland Unemployed Soccer, PUS.
Oh.
So I'm just a big fan of acronyms. I think they're fun.
Great. So for many people who are hearing you for the first time, tell us a little bit about yourself and what PUGS is all about.
Sure. Portland Underground Grad School is a program for people who are adults who want to keep on learning and growing in their daily lives without having to pay to go back to grad school. So it's people who are seeking to become who they want to be. And education is just a very basic tool to get there.
And it's for everyone, and in terms of interest and availability, we can find you where on the web?
Yeah, our website is pugspdx.com. That's PUGSPDX.com. And courses are a month long, usually. We might go longer courses next year. And classes are usually around $150 for the month, but we also have a discounted tuition policy. Our belief is that everyone has a right to education, so we allow anyone in at the price they can afford.
Excellent. So, just before we went on the air, you mentioned that you teach a popular course at PUGS, that you've taught it numerous times. You just get great reviews and people keep asking for it.
Sure, yes. I'm teaching Financial Freedom again this month on Wednesday nights at Southeast Uplift. And I've taught it, I'd say, 6 or 7 times this year, and people keep on coming back. And the basic story is, I'll just tell you my personal story. When I graduated from college, my first job was at the Justice Department. And in college, I was pretty poor. Immigrant kid. Didn't make a lot of money, lived in the co-op, and I spent $5,000 a year in college. And so when I got my first job after college, which was at the Justice Department in Washington, D.C., I made $25,000, mm-hmm. and I spent $15,000, and I felt rich, right? Like, yes. I was spending $15,000, which was 3 times more than what I spent before. Mm-hmm. And I just decided then and there, philosophically, and just in terms of financial planning, that that's all the money I needed to be happy. So I just drew a line. Like, I didn't want to spend more money in terms of environmental impact. I didn't want to spend more money in terms of consumption. I didn't want to, quote, raise my standard of living just because I made more money. And so for the next 20 years, I lived on that amount, $15,000 to $20,000 a year. I think it's like $25,000 now with inflation. But when I got laid off 2.5 years ago, after 20 years of saving everything else, and I've made $150,000 as a lawyer, and I've made $30,000 as a school teacher, but I've saved everything else, I realized 2.5 years ago when I got laid off, I didn't need to work anymore because I could create enough passive income to live my daily life.
Now, that might be startling for people to hear, that you did not need to work anymore. And perhaps you can talk about the difference between, I assume, voluntary simplicity and those who are living below the national average, not because it's voluntary, but because of the economy and the unavailability to find ways to support your kids.
For sure. I mean, the first thing I'd say is that people of all incomes come to my course. And the big thing is it's about financial literacy. What I've discovered is that most Americans were not taught, either by their parents or in school, about finances. And that's like one of the core areas you need to know about life. And there are any number of people and institutions that will take advantage of you if you don't know anything about it. So the core lesson in Financial Freedom, my course, is that this is a lifetime learning demand, that you have to keep on educating yourself just as personal agency. That's probably the core to financial freedom, that you need to be in control of your financial life. So I would say that I mean, it doesn't matter if you make $15,000 or $150,000. The core lesson that most Americans need to get is that you have to spend less money than you earn. And it's interesting. The statistic is that even the rich people, like Americans who spend $100,000 or who earn $100,000 to $150,000, high income, six-figure earners, almost half of them do not have $1,000 in the bank. So it's endemic to people who are poor and people who are rich. Financial education is just necessary.
What do you think bring people to this course? An awareness that they are living beyond their means, a curiosity in terms of education, in terms of financial literacy, or are there other reasons why people might search out for your course and find it beneficial for their lives?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is feeling like it's a lack of control in their lives. And I think people take this course just to feel like they have more control. You know, one of the things we talk about in the first class, which is Wednesday night, is what are called money scripts. And those are the unconscious beliefs typically given to us in our families. And it's generational, that determine our beliefs about money. And because of that, those scripts, which are largely unconscious, we do things without thinking. There's a huge emotional content to our relationship with money. And just becoming aware of how we feel about money and how we learned about money is probably the very first step. And I think that's probably one of the keys to the course, just understanding like where our beliefs about money came from.
We're speaking with Douglas Choi of the Portland Underground Grad School, PUGS, and his course there that begins this Wednesday, the day after tomorrow.
That's right.
About financial literacy. What's the title of the course?
Financial Freedom.
Financial Freedom.
Become the CFO of your life.
Wow. I can do that. So, and I take your course. 1 month, and it helps me to understand many of these the scripts I hear in the back of my head, and how to relate to money, because there are so many messages we get about money, about what's its purpose, whether it's something that we need to be happy. So I imagine that An objective of your course is first understanding what those scripts are, and then maybe questioning them or changing our relationship with money.
Yeah, and the different money scripts run the gamut from, like, you know, money is power, and I want to gather as much as possible, and it's, you know, you need money to even get love, to, like, we get taught other things like money is evil and we need to avoid it, and we need to not to think about it. And I think both are really dangerous in separate ways.
If you have a question or a comment with us, we invite your calls this morning and talk to Douglas about your relationship with money. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187, and give us a call and tell us how you feel about money. Now, these money scripts that we hear in the first class, people are empowered to begin describing them or finding what those are. I don't want to go too deep because I want people to come to your class. Do you examine the different attitudes that people have in your class about money? You mentioned that there are many scripts and things we are taught about money. Do people have different understanding in terms of their relationship with money?
Absolutely. And the first class, what we do is we just begin exploring for self-awareness. You know, one of the basic ideas is, unless you bring it to light, you don't see it. And if you don't see it, you can't do anything with it. And so just having self-awareness, I think, is the very first step, and that's what we talk about.
That's very, I think it's very important. As I think about how I was taught about money, one thing that I was taught is you seldom talk about it, and that it's something to, it's not polite to talk about money and necessarily with family or friends to talk about how much you earn or what you should do with it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, how does that affect you? You think that you don't talk about it with other people?
I need to come to your course on Wednesday at Southeast Uplift. What time is it?
It is from 6:30 to 8:30.
6:30 to 8:30, and it's for 1 month. So there's what, four classes?
Yeah, there are four classes, and what I realized after teaching it multiple times this year is that it's a huge step to take the course, and I think it's a huge emotional step for most people just to acknowledge that they need to learn something about it, and they feel much more free after they've taken the course. But what I realized is people still need support and accountability to actually do the things we talk about in class. Like, we write a financial manifesto. What do we want in our lives? And then we write a financial plan and we plan our budgets. And what I realized is it's hard to do it by yourself. And so the last class, which I taught in September, and this class, I've created what are called genius huddles. And the genius huddles are small groups where people will meet regularly to keep on going at it.
Excellent. Let's go to a listener who has called in to talk to you about money.
So quick.
Brian, good morning.
Oh, good morning. I'm not really prepared to talk about this, but I was so intrigued by the subject that I had to call. I've been having a kind of a tough time with money lately. I'm in my mid to late 50s, and I spent my life doing things that I really believed in. I'm a musician. My wife and I started a farm because we believed in supplying, you know, healthy food to our community and taking care of a piece of land. Felt like, to me, kind of, a lot of times I think I don't feel like fiddling while Rome burns, and doing something involved with air, water, or food felt the most pragmatic thing. But I've gotten to a point where you're making so little money for so long, I'm starting to feel like I'm pulling my head out of the sand kind of finally and looking around and seeing how much money people make and how much I've been able to do on so little. I'm just kind of confused by it all. I'd like a relative just called from California to say they just got a new job and they're making $170,000 a year. Right. And then another friend of mine who was had a neat little business, I found out they were making $100,000 a year, and my head's just swimming with all this money. I mean, the most I've made on the farm is like $20,000 for working, you know, maybe $25,000 for working just ridiculous amounts. And so I find myself confused by the amount of money, and when people say they're not making much money, what do they really mean? And so I was just thinking maybe what I'm going through might, like, ring true with other people that are listening. But I've managed to make very little money and actually save more than a lot of people I know. And the subject matter, what you're talking about, really is kind of found a home with me.
Well, Brian, I mean, first of all, I would congratulate you. Like, you've lived the life that you've wanted, and you've, like, made it work. One of the secrets is, like, you know, it doesn't matter if, like, you've got relatives that make $170,000 or $100,000. It really depends on how much they're saving. Like, if they're making $170,000 and they're spending $170,000, they're actually not any wealthier than you. They're actually poorer than you. And that's one of the dirty secrets that we talk about in class, that wealth does not equal income. And so, like, a basic idea that I talk about in class is, like, let's take a business like Apple. Like, when you ask Apple, like, how much did Apple make last year? They made, I don't know, I'm going to guess, like, $50 billion last year. But Apple doesn't count how much money they received. They count the profit, right? They don't, like, they don't say, well, we, you know, we sold this many iPads and iPhones and this is how much money we made. They only count it after the cost. And curiously enough, humans like us Americans, when we say how much money do you make, we count income. And income doesn't matter. It's how much you save at the end of the year. What is your profit? Because your profit is the only thing that matters at the end of the year.
Right. Yeah. For us, one of the things that does matter, even though what we're doing is what things we believe in, and that's a good thing, we also realize that there is such a thing as too much of a good thing, as in when you're working this hard for something you believe in, but you have like no time off and there's no wiggle room.
Yes.
And there's no, you know, that's one of the things I notice, that people that do make, you know, what we, you know, traditionally call a lot of money, they do have time off. They tend to have time. People talk about watching TV, for example, and they're like, what's that? To go on vacation. So that's something that we've learned, we've decided, is that if we're going to make so little money, we'd like to not work so hard, or if we're going to work so hard, we'd like to make money for it. And it's been a good experiment in joining the rest of the third world as being a small farmer, to realize what it's like to be on the production end of things. You realize the people that actually create the value in our society are the people that get the most underpaid, that get least. If you rise through the echelon into sales or whatever, you know, into those, quote, leadership positions where you're not working as hard, you make more money. And the people that are down on the bottom that are actually, you know, growing the vegetables or mining the ore or whatever they're doing, they're the people that are getting no income for it. So that's just a little interesting aside.
Hey, thank you, Brian, so much, and continue doing what you love.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to try.
Okay, great. You're listening to More Talk Radio, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 Corvallis, Albany areas, and KBOO.FM via the World Wide Web. This is More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil. I'm speaking with Douglas and about PUGS, Portland Underground Graduate School, and financial literacy. Give us a call with your thoughts, 503-231-8187. And I think we have another caller. LJ, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Cecil. How are you?
I am well, thank you for asking.
Wow. It's been a pretty horrific morning. We understand that there was the largest mass shooting in history down in Las Vegas.
Yes, I just heard about that.
Yeah, anyway, it's an umptum. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, LJ.
All right, so here's our situation. We're in our very late 70s, all right? I was a line cook. And my wife worked with mentally retarded adults. Neither one of us ever made much more than minimum wage. All right, we have a house that we bought back in '87, I think, and our mortgage was $212.24 a month, including insurance. All right, my wife and I live on our Social Security income, which is not all that much. Afford to pay cash for it, then we simply don't need it. And if we want it bad enough, we'll save what we can and buy what we need, but we're very, very frugal. So the system works for us because we never ever lived above our means, right? My concerns are about the millennials. These folks did what they were supposed to do. They went to college. A lot of them have graduate degrees. These folks are in debt for maybe $50,000, $100,000 even before they are able to earn any money. So my question to you, Doug, is: are these people actually indentured servants?
Thank you, LJ.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Yeah, thank you, LJ. I mean, first of all, thanks for your question. I think one of the things is, you know, the majority of millennials do not have college degrees, and only a tiny percentage of them actually do go to grad school. And there's a wide swath of Americans that never get college degrees. And, you know, there are a couple of things to think about. Like, you know, we think of college degrees as necessary, and as college gets more expensive, that puts everyone in a tight bind. Yeah, and indentured servitude is a great metaphor for educational debt. I'd go a little further and suggest that I'm coming from the other side, LJ. Like, I retired after 20 years of working, and I feel like even those 20 years were indentured servitude, because after you get to the other side, you realize you really have freedom to do what you want, live with purpose, take care of your friends and family, take care of your own health. But what you're talking about with educational debt, I think, is really scary. I think grad school is not a automatic, you should get it, and it will pay back over a long time. It's part of the reason I started Portland Underground Grad School, so that people can keep on getting their education without having to go $50,000, $100,000 into debt. I think in the future there are going to be many, many ways to get education without having to get a credentialed graduate school degree.
Mm-hmm. One of the myths that you, LJ, you talked about is the necessity for many people to think that they need a degree, and although you enlightened us by reminding us that most young people are not either students or grad students, but I think we need to really understand how do we, encounter those challenges. So one of the things we hear is that we need to get an education and we need to go to grad school because we'll make a good income. Not many people do. And as education becomes more expensive here, less people have those opportunities. So how do we first affirm the worthiness of individuals, and have people understand that they can, I don't like using this word, but succeed without going the route that we often hear from those many voices in our minds, that unless we go to college and grad school, we won't be able to get a good job, and we won't be successful. How do we either refuse to allow those messages in us, or be satisfied with where we are in order to live a fulfilled life?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really tough question, Cecil. I think it's going to be a tough sled. You know, I call it the educational industrial complex. Yes. Which is hierarchical and exclusive. It says that, like, the only way that you have legitimacy is if you come to us and pay us a lot of money, and then you'll have access to regular society. I think people are opting out slowly, and I think it's going to happen. It's not going to be easy. I think it would really help if employers, what's happening is employers are requiring, for example, a college degree for, frankly, a job that doesn't actually need a college degree, but they're just adding that requirement so they narrow the field. I think that once our society understands that, no one's ever asked me where I went to college, quite frankly. And, like, other than, like, when I apply for jobs, like, when this is a college degree is necessary, no one's ever known if I've gone to college, quite frankly. No one's ever known that I've gone to grad school. And I think employers need to shift that attitude and move towards what have they done in their lives, right? Like, it's like Missouri, right? The show me state. Like, yes. Show me, what is your portfolio of stuff you've done? What are people saying about your work quality. I think that's what we have to move to.
We're speaking with Douglas of the Portland Underground Graduate School. Give us a call as you think about your relationship with money and your understanding of what it means to live the fulfilled life. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And you know, Douglas, perhaps no one have asked you about where you went to school, but every year I get a reminder from my prep school, college, and grad school that I went to their school, and why don't I contribute to the annual fund? So maybe I should just forget those.
Well, I'm going to join at this point and put a little bit of a shift on the subject. Good morning, all. I'm the other half of the CNC. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland, 90.7. In the metro area, 91.9 if you're in Points East. Along the Willamette River Valley, it's 104.3. And everywhere, it's KBOO.FM. So, Douglas, one of the reasons why we thought about this show was because for a lot of my younger friends, millennials, call them out, scare them to death here, this whole idea of economic freedom is even more fraught with some levels of misery, some levels of mystery, and some levels of, I'll say, misunderstanding. One of the common things I hear from young people is the cost of their education and the debt load they come out with, and then the cost of life and managing a debt load with a lower than useful income. So I was wondering how we might talk about living in this, what I've heard called the gig economy. In other words, you don't get a job, so you line up a series of gigs to kind of give you enough income to either negotiate the debt load or just negotiate life. And it sounds like your course would be a good thing for a lot of millennials to consider, since the whole landscape of income and livable income and savings may have shifted, or maybe it's just our consciousness has shifted. I'm not sure. Or maybe the economy and our consciousness shifted. I like that look on your face.
There's a lot there. The last one. I don't know what to say.
Well, let's just start about how useful the course is in terms of understanding how we've had a major shift. And let's start with this one. You're not going to get a job that may pay you a decent wage fresh out of school like you used to. You might, if you're in coding, you may not even finish school. Depends on how successful you are. And for people who maybe have not heard the phrase coding, we're talking about writing the code that fuels applications for your phones or the programs that are on your computer, you know. But, I mean, the economy has shifted so that it's harder for young people to come out with a livable income and a job that may last longer than 10 years.
Yeah, I agree. I think, one of the things I would go back to is this idea of money scripts, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and
which is such a play on words.
How so?
Well, script without
script. Yeah.
I mean, because when you said that the first time, I thought, yeah, didn't that what they used to play military men? They get a script, you know, and that was their little chit for money, you know.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, one of the things I think about is we live in an incredible, like, we get a ton of messages in American society about consuming. And I think that has a huge effect on anyone who's grown up. And from what I've heard, millennials got hit harder with it than people older than us. Like, they have been swimming in a water, in water that is filled with money messages for their entire lives. And so, you know, there's some very basic stuff about, like, how do you budget for consumption? I think, I mean, one of the things I talk about in my class, there are only two numbers you have to know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, three numbers, but they come down to two numbers. So the math is that if you save half your income for 16 years, you don't have to work again in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is your savings rate. If your savings rate is 50%, for 16 years, you won't have to work again. And your savings rate is basically your income and your consumption, like your income minus your consumption. And so it's very interesting looking at other financial courses. They talk about creating income. And the most important thing is controlling your consumption, because that is totally within your control. And, you know, I know people who, like, live in New York City,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, make $150,000, but they can't afford their lifestyle, right? And one of the things I question is, was moving to New York right after college the necessary thing? Was moving, even, like, quite frankly, like, as Portland gets more expensive, I really question, like, I don't think I would have moved here if Portland was this expensive when I moved here 11 years ago. And so having finances is one of the core things you think about when you make major life decisions, I think, is the key.
One of the things that that underscores the millennial consumption lifestyle, and millennials, if you're listening, I do need you to call in, is the fact that they do make certain lifestyle choices that you would think would afford them an easier lifestyle at a lower consumption rate. Many do not buy cars.
Excellent. Yeah.
Okay. Many choose to use mass transit, public transit, or they may Uber. Now, Uber, et cetera, Lyft and all that, they're not that cheap. You know, it can add up unless you take advantage of some of the incentives they have. They do not buy houses, and one reason they don't buy houses is because they've been priced out of the market. So they are, and by they again, I mean millennials, are driving a lot of the RV sales for homes or modular homes, okay? Many will do co-op living and will be really... I guess discriminating in how they buy some of their clothes. You know, thrift stores, co-ops, and all these things make a difference. So given that, what do you see in terms of a millennial lifestyle makes it both easier and harder to survive with the kinds of financial and economic options, I guess, they have now?
Yeah, I mean, I think everything you pointed out are the things that make millennials, they're just much more flexible.
Mm-hmm.
Like the ones that come to my class, like, yeah, they don't have a car. They live in apartments with other people. And, like, they, on some level, have opted out of, quote, that American dream that, like, we as older people have been taught. And that's fantastic, right?
Mm-hmm.
The income side of it is the thing that becomes much more hard. You know, one of the things we have one whole class on investing and side hustles.
Mm-hmm.
And
I like that, side hustles. Everybody needs one. If for no other reason, keep you out of trouble.
Well, Pugs started as a side hustle. I mm-hmm. had a job when I started Portland Underground grad school, and it became, when I retired, it became the thing that I wanted to do. And so a side hustle has so many different benefits, not only income, but it is opportunity, but it's also a vehicle for you to grow as a person. One of the things we talk about most is the thing that will help you most is investing in yourself. Investing yourself is going to bring the greatest return on investment than anything else.
You're listening to KBOO, and we are talking with Douglas from Portland Underground Graduate School about financial literacy, maybe leading to your financial independence. Let's go to our caller on the line.
Thanks for holding. Good morning, Sean.
This is a recording.
Oh, gosh, is that not life today? Well, this is not a recording, so give us a call at 503-231-8187 and join in the conversation. And again, you know, we want to welcome millennials to call and talk a little bit about your lifestyle and maybe chat up Douglas about getting involved in financial freedom. We're going to our next caller. Good morning, John.
Good morning, everybody. Great show, great topic. And I think we have to face the harsh reality of the world as it is at this point in time, as our tricky Dick Nixon used to say, is that, hey, there's almost 8 billion people on the planet. India's going to surpass China in population. And capitalism looks at us as just a supply and demand commodity. Unless we have good government laws to protect we the people, all of us, from living in outside in the elements. And my suggestion is, I hope all millennials that are listening, and I hope all of us are encouraging millennials, you got to vote. That, you know, if we don't vote, democracy is going to be gone. It's already half gone as it is. And we need good government, we the people, as we pay most of the taxes. So I think, well, most of us pay, 30-35% of our gross income as taxes. We need to make sure our government is looking out for it. And I know these things seem obvious, and maybe you've covered them already, but I think those are important things to remember. Okay. And that's, you know, like Bernie Sanders, I'm a Bernie-crat Democrat. Hey, we need a lot more socialism.
Okay, thank
you. Control capitalism. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you, John. So most of our conversation has been on the micro level.
Yeah.
And the caller asked us about the macro issue in terms of the economy and capitalism.
And does voting as a control.
Sure.
Does your course address these issues?
It doesn't, but I mean, I think the caller makes a really interesting comment because, I mean, have you ever talked to anyone from the Great Depression? Like, who's lived with the Great Depression?
Oh, yeah.
First of all, like, their attitudes towards money are completely different, right? Like, they just, it's completely different. And, you know, my parents, immigrants, their attitude towards money, completely different. Like, for example, I'm just going to tell a secret here. My mom used to steal napkins from work, use them at home, right? Like, like, some really basic stuff. Like, I'm not suggesting anyone steal anything from work, but, like, your attitude towards money is profoundly influenced by your circumstances, right? And so I would just add, like, you know, anyone who lived in the Great Depression, like, that's when Franklin D. Roosevelt was there. Like, socialism can thrive in hard times, and hard times can bloom into something that would be better for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just wanted to add that, like, you know,
well, when it forces a reconfiguration, which you were talking about earlier. A evaluation of your spending habits, of the scripts of what we were taught about money, it forces that. It forces it both on the micro and the macro level, as you were saying. It's kind of like you may not have written out your financial manifesto, but there was a discussion, at least on a family and national level, about where our money was going to go. We don't do that now.
No, I don't think we're taught about money at all.
So, Douglas, to recall some of the things we talked about earlier in terms of why people should take this course, one thing you mentioned earlier was the difference between income and wealth, and the importance of saving. How do people discipline themselves when there are so many messages that we get is that we need the newest phone, the best car, and that unless we are buying into this myth, there's something wrong with us. How do we change that script in our head?
I think one of the things is just understanding that, like, I mean, we buy a lot of things just for status. Like, most Americans are buying things for status. And we do it thoughtlessly, without really thinking about whether we enjoy the thing itself. And most of the time, and they do any number of studies about this, most of the time people get pleasure when they buy something at the moment of purchase. Mm-hmm. They don't actually get a lot of pleasure from the owning of things itself. And so, you know, we live in a society where I think it's $200 billion gets spent on advertising a year. $200 billion. And all of it is spent, and I do marketing for pugs, so I understand it, like activating your inadequacies, right? And so I think part of it is just, we talk about writing a financial manifesto, having something that matters more to you than all the messages you're getting from the outside.
So that takes some time, a pause and reflection to really shift through those thoughts and to counter what we think or what we hear, what we dream about what's important to us.
Well, not just that. I like the way you both put it, but when you were saying that we get more enjoyment from the purchase, a couple of things came to mind. One is that simple Pavlovian response. Okay, so buy, get some type of endorphin release. Well, maybe both. Okay, but more importantly, it was like you said, going back to the financial manifesto is what was the point of the purchase? Now, I'm one of these people that takes a long time, and I look at stuff, and then I buy something, and then I might regret it, even though I might have done a lot of research. But I am happy with it once I recognize how much I'm using it. So I, for example, have a Galaxy Note 3. Anybody who's been hanging up with the phones knows that Samsung put out the Note 8. Okay, so I'm like way old. My thing is, I'll check in every now and then and make sure that the technology still works. But I get so much satisfaction from having used the heck out of this. My vehicles is like, how many thousands of miles past 200 can I get them to go? And so I think on a certain level, we need to really rethink how we get satisfaction from using what we get. And you say that, but I think for those of us like me who think a little bit differently, is like, how long do you want those endorphins to fire? How long do you want to have satisfaction for something? Stop and think, is this purchase going to give me that long-term usefulness and satisfaction? Because to me, that's like paying dividends over and over again. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, and I wonder how many people, when they make a purchase, think like that. So 503-231-8187, as we weave all these different ideas together to create that tapestry that Douglas has with his class Financial Freedom. And we'll go to, is it Barth? Hello?
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning, folks. Tagging on to what you just said, the idea of purchasing quality over quantity is a point that not a lot of people appreciate. And longevity in an item works on so many levels. You know, it's good for the environment, it's good for you, it gives you less stuff to store because the same item does more things. And it is paying dividends, it is paying satisfaction. And people need to, well, it would be useful for people to dial into that, you know, to think that the newest, the sharpest, the latest iteration of everything is not necessarily better. I remember when the Windows updates were in the early days. I'm not a big computer guy, but, you know, people would have to update because the old stuff would not be supported, and then their computers would crash and die, and they had to do extensive work just to make them function. I think that that's improved abstractly and with phones too, but those same kind of things matter. If you get something that actually works for a long time and doesn't require extensive financial input to keep functioning, then you're wealthier for owning it. I love the idea of Douglas's class. I'm not sure when I can get over to take it because I could use it. Attitudes about money are ingrained, as he said, and there is such a push in society to make people consume, that we are all consumers and versus persons. You know, you're not, you are what you own. And so getting a handle on that is also good. I wonder if you could touch upon, I know it's a little outside of the scope of your topic, but some large numbers of people are predicting that the end of work is coming, that we're going to be obsoleted in terms of job functions in wide areas of our society, and so it's hard to know where people are going to make an income or how they're going to be able to spend it.
Okay.
Sure.
We'll have to just focus on that one. Bart, thanks for your call.
So, I mean, I would say, the idea that we're going to be automated out of our jobs is a scary one, and part of the idea of financial freedom is to get ahead of that curve. And, you know, we were just talking about the idea of, purchasing things and extending its value, and one of the basic attitudes in the course is that you don't want to purchase things. You don't even purchase experiences, which is what the millennials are going for. Yes. What you actually want to purchase is your financial freedom.
Mm.
So instead of buying things, buy time. And the only way you can buy time is spinning enough profit off that eventually you don't have to work anymore. I would suggest, and that's a basic attitudinal thing. Where's your money going? Is it going to buying things? And it has to buy things, right, just to survive. But I think one of the core things we learn in America is that we're happy by consuming, and even consuming experiences, right? And what I'm trying to suggest is that we're happiest when we have the choice to do what we want in our lives, to spend time with the people we care about, to live according to our purpose, and to take care of our own health.
Before we go to our next call list, Douglas, tell us how people might find out about your course. When is it? And how might they enroll?
We have a class starting on Wednesday, 6:30 to 8:30 at Southeast Uplift, which is 3534 Southeast Main Street. And they could sign up for the course at pugspdx.com. That is Portland Underground Grad School, if you just want to Google it. But pugspdx.com.
Excellent. Let's go to our next caller. Liz, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Tito and Celeste. This is Liz Perry.
Hola.
I wanted to thank you for this show. It's super important. I work with students and all ages of students, and I really am glad that you're talking about this. And one of the exercises, because I do financial literacy with students as well, is, and you may have covered this because I tuned in a little late, but having students start with an evaluation of their values, and then having them just reflect on how their money is being spent and how that matches up, and that really helps to guide the rest of everything we do. And I so appreciate the work that's being done, because especially with students, it's scary to think about spending the rest of your life paying off a student loan debt. So
yes,
I work with very low income immigrant students, and they're able to see very clearly, and I tell them I'm very humbled by the experience of working with them and knowing that everything that they do to improve their lives is at the sacrifice of a lot of things. But I also stress that by doing this work early in their lives, or at whatever point that they have the ability to keep their families in the hopefully a more secure place, knowing that they're making the best choices they can with the income they have. So thank you, really. That's mostly what I called, and just to thank, and I'm sorry I didn't catch the first part of this show, but thanks for the show.
Thank you. Liz, before you go, you mentioned that you teach students. Now, are your classes accessible to the public, or are you just part of the educational system?
So I teach at Mount Hood Community College, and I do this as part of a college entry program for Latinas.
Mm-hmm.
But we also are partnering with a department of the only word I can say is blessing for students, because it's a Match College Savings Program. So they are doing this work as a part of having their funds matched for the purposes of education. And I share with them, it's been a transformative process for me, because, you know, it's really made me think about every choice I make. And I confess, my consumption goes in the direction of shoes. So and I do that, you know, just to be all the way straight with them, you know, like this is the way we're socialized and programmed. And so the more we can be thoughtful about each thing that we purchase, it's, and I appreciate the thought about, you know, how do we want to spend our energy in the form of money, and that energy gets spent, you know, in the service of people and the things we care about. So, and then to answer your question is, we are actually starting a partnership where we will be opening that up a little bit more. So, I will keep in touch with y'all and let you know, but primarily right now it's students that are at Mount Hood Community College.
All righty. Well, thank you so much, Liz, for the information and doing what you're doing, too. Mil gracias.
So I just want to add a couple of things to that. Number one, I think, Liz, if you ever want me to come to class, I'd be happy to. I was a poor immigrant kid.
I would love that.
Yeah. So, yeah, get in touch. Second thing is, yeah, I think immigrants have something. They get something that homegrown Americans don't. Like, as an immigrant myself, like, I read a lot of statistics. Like, a lot of immigrant families actually make more money the second generation than, like, despite all the obstacles, make more money and have more wealth second generation than homegrown Americans. And third, yeah, one of the things we talk about in the class is a financial audit. Like, if you died and someone looked at your bank account, could they tell what values you had while you were alive? And mm-hmm. I think that's a super interesting exercise.
Let's see. Did we get our last call? I'm trying to get the... Okay, this will be our last call. Sherry, you're on the air.
Great. Thanks for squeezing me in. I just wanted to say that I've been participating in an event that is both buying an experience. It doesn't cost any money, but it's how I've gotten my clothes and how I've done my clothes shopping for the last 15 years with my girlfriends. We get together for a ladies' clothing exchange, and everybody brings all their clothes that either they don't like anymore, or their aunt bought them that they never liked in the first place, or they just don't fit anymore. And we bring all our clothes together, and we even have a rack. We're like our own little store, and we have it sorted small, medium, and large, and on the kitchen table there's all the folding clothes and mirrors all over, and it's all ladies. It's also known as a naked lady party.
Right.
And I've gotten my entire wardrobe that way for years and years, and it's a beautiful time with friends. We have a potluck dinner, and everyone goes away with new clothes and gotten rid of emptied their closet of the things that don't wear, and anything that doesn't get taken, we donate to a women's shelter.
Perfect. Thank you so much, and that ends everything for us. So cooperative living seems to make a big difference, and in terms of a contribution, one of the best contributions I've heard in a while is your class, Douglas. So sum it up.
Yeah, it's the idea of taking control of your financial life, and by doing that, taking control of your future. 4 classes in October, Wednesdays, 6:30 to 8:30, Portland Underground Grad School.
That's where you can buy your freedom to be yourself.
Thank you, Douglas, for joining us today.
Yes.
I have such fun hanging out with you guys.
Hey, you're always welcome. And we also welcome you to stay tuned to your community connection, KBOO Portland. Coming up at 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour, political significance of recent athletes' revolt, plus a review of the new Winona LaDuke documentary, First Daughter and the Black Snake. 10 o'clock, Locust Focus. Barbara Bernstein looks at impact of Eagle Creek fire on the gorge. Health Watch look at a new documentary, Unrest, about the mysterious illness known as chronic fatigue syndrome. 11:30 Madness Radio, and keep involved, keep donating, and support your community radio station because you're vying your freedom.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Pathway 1000 Community Kickoff on Saturday, October 7th at 10 a.m. at PCC's Workforce Training Center in Portland. Pathway 1000 is a Portland Community Reinvestment Initiatives campaign to mitigate displacement and reclaim the historic heart and soul of Portland's African American community in North and Northeast Portland. The purpose of this initiative is to build prosperity for African Americans and others displaced from Portland's North and Northeast neighborhoods by creating 1,000 affordable homes. Again, that's the Pathway 1000 Community Kickoff, Saturday, October 7th, 10 a.m. at PCC's Workforce Training Center, 5600 Northeast 42nd Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I wish I was a mole in the ground. I wish I was a mole.